I knew the guys there, and at the time, they offered me to be kind of like the boat bitch. And I don't know, can we swear on here? I got to spend hours and hours with whales and dolphins and meet people from around the world, all walks of life. So it's like you're in an aquarium at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, pitch black. You're seeing sharks swim underneath you. And then all of a sudden, these massive manta rays just swim into the picture. And it's just like, it's unbelievable. The ocean's like very romanticized a lot. No one really truly knows how to harness its power. You know, it's kind of like you just, you can feel the energy of it. I know that sounds kind of out there, but it's just something that I think everyone knows. This is Captain Zach Rollins from Along the Keel, and you're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
Our culture needs people that are leaders and not people that are waiting for somebody else to show them how to do it.
Those fields of tofu, that was formerly habitat for wildlife. You're killing off wildlife by being a vegetarian just as much as a hunter when he kills a deer.
I'm like, well, you see that bush right there? There's your bathroom.
Yeah. My dad wears a Levi jacket. He sits in front of a sagebrush and he tells me the best camo is hold still.
Not to Donnie Vincent this, but be relentless in everything you do. Don't crap out. Go back to the truck with excuses or whatever.
Okay, assume I get a deer. How do I cut it up to fit into a Honda Civic?
Just get outside. Just get outside and go. Because once you do, it's all gravy from there.
Hey, this is Zach Griffiths.
This is Hannah Barron.
This is Jason Phelps with Phelps Game Calls.
Hey, guys. This is Cody Rich from the Rich Outdoors Podcast.
What's up, guys? This is Chad Mendez.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
No, so a Montana thirst trap is me standing in front of my barn talking about how, you know, I'm just looking for a woman that wants to move to a ranch and start a family and raise animals. And it's, you know, pork dramatic knives. Music playing in the, exactly, you know,
eat pork
dramatic music playing in the background. and then all of the like middle-aged women that are obsessed with Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of views and comments, like, TikTok is a weird ass place, man. It's so weird. We're gonna keep talking about social media all day long. I should probably introduce the podcast, but I kind of like, I might have to start doing the whole, I call this the meat eater method, where you just kind of start the podcast in the middle of the conversation, like the, yeah, you get a little pre-show. So I think maybe I'm gonna have to start doing this, you know, a little intro. But
I have just started, and only by like, I guess by association, have I started to be like, all right, maybe I should start a TikTok. And I did. I don't get it still. And it's funny, like, I don't actually, like, on Instagram, right? Like, I think it's because I've been using it for so long. You know, I use it for like all the businesses and whatnot. Yeah. But then I actually use it personally. Like, we'll scroll through and, you know, whenever I have some downtime, just check other people's stuff out on TikTok. I literally will make a post and leave, and that's it.
Dude. There have been days. So TikTok has this thing where if you scroll for too long, they have like, basically I call them interdiction videos, or where it's like made by TikTok, by employees of TikTok, and it'll pop up and be like, hey, I know there's lots of great videos on TikTok, but don't you think you've been scrolling? They're like super condescending.
Seriously?
Yeah. It's like, maybe you should, you know, get some sleep or go out, you know, depending on the time of day too, it changes. It's like, maybe you should get some sleep, or maybe you should go outside and enjoy the sun for a bit, or, you know, maybe you should go grab a meal with some friends, or, you know, it's like, and they're just super condescending. I'm like, fuck you, TikTok. If I've been scrolling for this long, if I've been scrolling for this long, I don't need you judging me. So I've already got some shit going on.
You're like, TikTok, hold your steam. I'm gonna keep doing me. Don't tell me what to do.
The only reason I've been scrolling is because I can't get to sleep right now. So stop reinforcing the fact that that's just rubbing it in.
Dude, it sounds like it's from like a post-up, you know, like those wicked future, like Blade Runner, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like you'd see something out of Blade Runner if they're like telling you, well, maybe you should do this or buy my blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the more and more social gets more mainstream, that's the way when things are going. It's wild.
It's weird, man. Yeah, TikTok's a weird place. I mean, the nice thing about it, and I tell everyone, like, it, my employees for my marketing business, because I do, you know, the digital marketing business for the outdoor industry. That's what pays the bills on the side.
Mm-hmm.
That I have employees for, and they're social guys. They're younger, and they were on my ass about starting a TikTok. They're like, Sam, if you want to grow the brand, this is where you need to be. And I'm like, at the time I was like, I'm a 37-year-old dude. Like, I do not need to be on TikTok. I was super grumpy old man about it, but I'm like, okay, they kept badgering me. So I started one. And I was just like, you can tell if you look at my very first ones, it's like begrudging. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. They're awkward. And then I kind of started to figure it out. And, you know, I was trying to stick in the hunting and fishing and outdoors realm for the brand. But then I started figuring out a little bit more of the algorithm, if you will, you know, and how to do it. And I just, at this point, it's just like whatever gets views, because then it sends people to my other platforms where I really promote the brand, where I like, where Instagram, where I'm heavily promoting the podcast, to my Facebook, to my website. You know, I've got all of these people following now. Like, but it's funny, you look at my I will take this as a compliment. You know, you look at my you look at my stats on Instagram and Facebook and whatever, you know, it's like it's skewed male, like all you know, dudes in the hunting industry, right? You know, that are interested in hunting, fishing, the outdoors. You look at my TikTok,
is it all women?
It's like it's like 75% women.
Oh, and shit.
It's like there's a lot of thirsty, you know, middle-aged women out there.
How are those DMs looking?
It's the nice thing about TikTok is you get to limit who DMs you.
So you're saying I should be on TikTok.
Closed for business on TikTok. But let's just say the comments, there's a couple. There's some funny ones. I'll send you some of my good ones. But yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, so, we're figuring out TikTok on my end, but it's really just a bunch of randomness.
It's honestly like, if you do it right and you can figure out, kind of get your niche, get your audience, it's still really easy to build a following. I mean, you know, these days on Instagram, you start a new account, like to get to 1,000 followers is a pretty big feat.
Brutal.
It's rough. Even if you have big accounts,
right,
sharing what you're doing. Instagram is killing just across the board. They're nerfing anything that's not a reel, for one.
Yeah.
But then they're also coming down hard on hunting and fishing pages.
Yeah.
Hard. I mean, I know you've probably heard of it. Tons of people are getting canceled.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It's bad. Like, if you got a hunting or fishing brand out there and you're not developing your other platforms, you're not building your own communities that you control, you're rolling the dice, man. If your only outlet, and I trust me, I'm there. It's tough to,
yeah,
like totally. 90% of my, I mean, short of TikTok, which I'm literally every day on the verge of getting canceled from, like I've got
the key to eating porcupines.
The bloody stuff doesn't go on the TikTok anymore, but I'm curious. I just posted a video of me picking up roadkill, and I'm curious if it. Oh, did it go
that was
up?
Awesome. I don't know. Was it on TikTok or Instagram?
It is on TikTok. Oh, it got up. I was like, so I have a perpetual account warning on my TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've posted enough. It's between, you know, violent content, dangerous acts, or apparently I'm also an internet bully, which I'm totally fine with. I'm a firm believer we need to bring back
Sam.
Oh, yeah.
Just list.
firm believer we need to bring back internet bullying, but that's a whole different conversation.
Conversation for another day.
Yeah. But yeah, I have a permanent account warning because I've had so many videos banned that they're like, your next suspension could result in permanent deletion of your account. And I'm like, shit. So
damn, that's coming down heavy.
It's they're getting distracted, but y'all, welcome to another episode of the Wild Initiative podcast, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network. All right, y'all. So hopping into today's episode, I have the one, the only Captain Zachariah. So should I be calling you Zachariah or Zach? Like, cause I feel like you're kind of like me where like I put Samuel on everything I do.
Yeah.
But I feel really weird when people call me Samuel.
Yeah, I would. I'm in the same boat because
I see what you did there.
What? Yeah. Oh, look at that. I didn't even notice that.
Along the keel in the
along same, the keel boat. Yeah. Captain.
This is what I got to get halfway into a beer. And I make jokes like that.
You're on point. We're very punny. Very punny guy.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think Zachariah is unique where if you put it on something like a business card or website, people are like, oh, that's interesting. They kind of, they recognize that. And then Zach is just seems to be easier in conversation. So
yeah, yeah.
He usually defaults to Zach, but if I'm in like a formal place, I'll throw Zachariah in there. Yeah. Unless, and then I get yelled at and Zachariah comes out.
Yeah, I was going to say the only, I'm either in trouble or it's a girl I'm dating. Like those are the only two people, like only two situations I can be called Samuel.
Same.
Like otherwise same. I feel really awkward, but I still put it, like I said, on all my business cards. I sign up for everything with Samuel.
Yeah, same thing.
But so we have the one, the only Captain Zach Collins, host of Along the Keel.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. I'm glad we finally, you know, I totally kind of bitched out during SHOT Show.
Dude, it was a long day that day.
That was rough, dude. I was doing 10 miles a day in cowboy boots, which is not a smart idea.
Dude, I didn't realize how big SHOT Show is. Like having gone to ATA, ICAST, and boat show. Like I've always been to boat shows.
Mm-hmm.
SHOT Show takes all those and combines them into one spot and then throws like a tram and a shuttle for another building that's the exact same size.
It's insane. It's like, yeah, it's like going to the these giant airports where you have to like, you're like, oh, okay, I'm finally in the airport, and you realize it's going to still take you 45 minutes to get to your actual gate. That's right. What it feels like in SHOT Show. You're like, okay, I'm in SHOT Show. All right, I'm supposed to meet this person in 10 minutes, and you realize it's going to take you like half an hour to get across the show to
just
where
trying to
at.
Walk there.
Yeah, oh yeah,
it's brutal. But it's a cool show. I mean, you get to see some wild shit, you know, night vision goggles, plastic ammunition, like it's random stuff.
You know, and it's one of those things where is it the most necessary thing probably for either of us to go to SHOT Show?
Absolutely not.
No, like we can make it relevant, you know, find the excuse. It's still a business expense, but it's really, I mean, I think it's so much more about just making those connections just in the industry across the board and and finding that there's
and then just have, it was funny because like I was it was at Rockman Bags. It was like, was it Rockman? Yeah, I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we were in front of Rockman when we were chatting.
Yeah, and I turned over and I'm like, Sam, what's up, dude? What are you doing here? It's like, Zach, what are you doing here? Do you want to do a podcast later? And then like with all the walking and hotel and all that other stuff that goes in, I was like, all right,
that was
we're going to pick this up another day. And I totally felt the same way.
That would have been the most useless podcast on earth. That would have been
people with brain mush.
Oh yeah. No, there would have been nothing good coming out of that, but
no,
but yeah, man. I tend to focus a lot more, you know, on hunting. You know, I've done a few fishing episodes. I've even touched on a lot more of kind of the East Coast saltwater life a little bit once or twice.
Sure.
But that's just not really been my focus. So I'm excited to have you on, add a little bit of variety, a little bit of spice to of life. Right. But yeah, man, I'd love to hear how were you introduced to all this? Like what really got you passionate? What got you into the outdoors and fishing and the captain life?
The captain life. Jeez. Yeah, man, I would say it all really started when I was really young. You know, I mean, my parents were both very outdoorsy people. My mom grew up on the water her whole life in the salt ponds here in Rhode Island. My dad was from Massachusetts, and he grew up fishing with his dad in Gloucester, Massachusetts. So they were longliners, and I don't know if you've seen the movie The Perfect Storm before.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so do you know the woman who is out fishing with the Andrea Gale? I don't know if you know. Linda Greenlaw is her name.
It's been so long since I've watched that movie, and I'm probably going to end up putting it on tonight after this while I'm having dinner. So
it's a great movie. It's a great movie.
Such a good movie. I haven't seen it forever, but so I do not remember that. But
yeah, well, so like my dad, they were docked up like three slips down or like a few slips down from that boat. So that's like to put in perspective of the type of fishing they were doing was long lining. So swordfish and all sorts of other, you know, a lot of bycatch in that industry. But between them, you know, grew up here in Rhode Island on the water my whole life. I've been working in the industry on the water for God, since I was 10, you know, and just always had a passion for it. Just being able to get on the water, get on the boat, growing up where the backyard is literally Narragansett Bay, and very fortunate to have had it that way. It was, you know, it's hard not to love the ocean when you live in Rhode Island, but I've been fortunate to grow up here and lived in Florida for a little bit, born in California, moved to Hawaii, lived in Hawaii for a bit. So always was,
you've been a coastal dude your entire life. Like venturing inland is a trip. No. For you.
Although I had the one state I've really enjoyed to be at was Montana. And if I ever had to,
I mean, that's just, it's hard given. To be. It's, I don't care. Be. That is a hill I will die on. Montana is the greatest place on earth.
Interior.
True. I will agree. It is just about a sweet spot. Anyone that wants to argue with me on that one. But
yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I've, you know, when I was in college, my buddy and I drew, you know, I took a little hiatus from the coastline and we went backpacking all through the Western United States. So South Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Washington. I'm trying to think of the other states we hit. We kind of just skipped over the Midwest because we don't really, I mean, I don't know, driving through the Midwest gets kind of boring. No offense to anyone listening from the Midwest. Very flat and grassy. But once you get to Montana or Wyoming, even the Dakotas were beautiful. And we just backpacked the crap out of it and did that twice, actually. So got a little bit of trail time in my blood, but mostly all by the coast, fishing, being captain, working on the water, managing marinas. Like, it's just like a part of me, you know, it's hard to get away from. And even today, like, although some of my time is now spent in the office, it's still like, I look out and I'm like, I think I'm gonna go do this on the weekend and I'm gonna go work on the water. Like, I don't know. It's in my blood.
That's the tough thing about like working from home for me. Mm-hmm. Is I'm sitting here and like, I love working on my property here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I just love doing that. And it's a good thing and a bad thing. Cause you know, I run my own business, so I can work on weekends. I can work in the evenings and the mornings, whenever I want, and take time off. So it's a good thing in that it breaks up my workday, but it's a bad thing in that I would probably go get distracted, be out there all day long without paying my bills. But you know, I'm staring there and I'm like looking out and I'm seeing that pile of wood right now, and I'm like, man, I need to get the chainsaw and cut that up and
start light that thing
prep
up.
For winter. You know, we're coming into fall here, and
Don't weather, say that. Come on, man.
Weather's gonna start turning, man. I know you're a summer guy, so here's the difference right here. Here's the difference. It's like this is your rut right now. This is your like rut season.
Mm-hmm.
For us in a few weeks. Just a few weeks, man. Oh,
come on.
I am so not ready for hunting season. Like, I'm ready, but I'm not ready.
Yeah.
But yeah, just in a few weeks, like, suddenly we're hitting fall and we're kicking off hunting season. And you guys probably start winding. But okay, so here's the thing. Isn't like November though the prime time for like certain like marlin and stuff like that?
Well, so I don't do a whole bunch of like, that's like very pelagic blue water fishing. I'm more I stay just because I'm limited by my boat. So I'm more like in, a little bit inshore, some offshore when I go with buddies to go tuna fishing. We'll go try and get some marlin. When I was in Hawaii, that was like the fish of choice. I mean, people eat marlin out there, okay. Which here on the East Coast, it's very kind of, people just don't do it. It's kind of like sacrilegious. But, you know, I will say the best time of year to be on the water here in Rhode Island is definitely the fall. You know, like, yeah, it's wild. Like September rolls around, the fisheries change a little bit. You know, you get those fall time stripers. They start to come up into the bay again. You get, you know, the bluefin tuna come back in a little bit closer, the striped bass, the sitag. Then you get false albacore that come real close, which are awesome. Like so much fun to go catch bonita. And then, you know, just kind of tapers off from there. And then tatogging is like a culture around here. So come fall, like you're bundled up and you're going fishing. So it's fun, I will say.
Dude, this is a whole different language than I am ever used to speaking on here. Like, I swear I maybe understand mean like one out of three words. I know that's probably a fish, I'm guessing. So I'm curious now, because I know probably there's people listening that are like, also the same thing, like, what the hell is this dude talking about? So you mentioned pelagic, like fishing versus like pelagic blue water fishing versus necessarily what you do. Mm-hmm. Maybe explain a little bit those, like the different types of, because I think especially like dudes out west are probably like, yeah, there's saltwater fishing. You go out on a boat with a big rod with one of those little waistbands that looks like a weird penis and, you know, that you put the fishing pole in and you rip out big ass fish out of the water. That's it's all the same thing. Which, you know, and I know it's not, but I think when you're not invested in something like that, you kind of just group it all together. So I'm curious, like the different experience types of fishing out there.
Man, well, I think, you know, having done a lot of fishing here in Rhode Island, you can kind of break it up into a few categories. So like you have shore casting, which is you get a massive rod, you know, a big old spinning reel, and you're just throwing a plug on it usually, and you're going off a beach or off a jetty. And then inshore fishing, which is usually on a boat or a kayak or a dinghy. Some guys go out on the dory. And then you have like offshore fishing or blue water, pelagic, like depending on how far you want to go out. And I think offshore, I mean, I get really into detail. Like I went to school for marine affairs from the University of Rhode Island. So there's like state water, territorial sea, the non-contiguous sea, and then you also have the EEZ, which goes out to 200 miles of the continental shelf. So that's like how all economies measure what water they have access to and their resources. So basically, if you want to consider offshore, I would say like if you're in, you know, 10 miles or so offshore, if you want to do a blanket statement, but it all depends, you know, it all depends on where you are in the U.S. Like that might be different when you're in the Carolinas, but here in Rhode Island, it quite could be to some people. But I also think it probably boils down to perspective too. So most of the time, in my eyes, they probably categorize it by the type of fish you're fishing for. So striper, you know, fluke, which is like a flounder, you know, fluke, flounder, bluefish, those are probably all inshore fish. And then pelagic would be like your, you know, your white and blue marlin, your tuna, your mahi. I mean, all these fish sometimes will come closer, but those are like pelagic fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just like had the biggest lesson right now.
I'm no expert, but like, that's how I've perceived it and whatnot.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, let's face it, compared to me, you're an absolute expert when it comes to this. I've got a buddy, a former guest on the podcast too,
actually
owes me a trip, salt trip out in Florida.
Oh, where?
I forget exactly where he is, but he promised me a marlin.
That's a big promise.
I helped him out with his website when he got screwed over, and his the company that was working on his website screwed him out of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And afterwards he was asking me for help. He's like, dude, I'll hook you up, man. I'll take you out for a marlin and an Osceola turkey, and we'll do some hog hunting and some gator hunting. I'm like, whoa,
damn,
let's just see if we can get one of those. And
that's two out of three. Out of three. Yeah.
Let's not overpromise here.
Right. Where in Florida was it? Do you know?
I damned if I remembered it. Like, I forget where he's at off the top
of my head. You gotta hit him up, man.
It's been one of those things, but it's like tough because, you know, we're talking November. We're talking like come fall and we want to be out there. And for me, that's like,
let's face it.
I probably haven't filled my elk tag in come September. And so I'm like grabbing my rifle and going out in October, mm-hmm. November. And actually this year I've got a buddy who's going on who drew a bison hunt, and I'm going to
tag along for that. Man.
Oh yeah, dude.
Absolutely.
That's going to be badass. I'll
with that.
and anybody that's listening that is in the Bozeman area, it's going to be down south. I think it's the West Yellowstone hunt. Mm-hmm. That wants to help on a bison hunt. We need eyeballs. So just throwing that out there for anyone.
Oh, well, I'll catch a flight.
Shoot, come on out, grab your pack and your boots, and
I'd be down.
We definitely need more eyeballs. We'll talk about this afterwards, man.
Okay, sounds good. I got asked by a fellow coworker. He's like, "Yeah, well, yeah, you can come on the elk hunt. I mean, you could be the pack guy." And I'm like, "Oh, great, yeah, leave Zach the pack mule job."
I was gonna say you going like elk. I mean, elk aren't too bad. You know, you're gonna take a few trips, especially if you're solo. It's gonna be a long day, but mm-hmm. you know, you're fine. But like, you get up to like moose and bison, you just need bodies, man. You need either an ATV or some dudes with packs.
Yeah. You know, that is a 1,000+ pound animal.
It is insane, man.
But all the meat, man. Oh my God. That's burgers for days.
Oh yeah. So that suffice to say, it's a little hard for me to get away in November. And it's kind of, I mean, we're talking like it's been 4 years since this, and I haven't taken them up on it. So I may have reached the expiration date on the offer at this point, if we're being honest.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. So, man, you know, you were kind of talking like you've been working on a boat since you were, what, like 10, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
What jobs do you do on a boat as a 10-year-old?
So my first job, I mean, I've always been working. Like, it's just something that I enjoy work. I mean, I would make, like, I would go chop wood in the backyard and just make up work. And when I got the opportunity of like, all right, now you're old enough to go get a job. There's a towboat company here called Safe Sea, and Safe Sea is basically, think about it as AAA in the water. So okay. Someone breaks down, they need help, they're sinking, they're on fire, like all this other stuff. You can be a member, and then they will go out and get you, you know, whether it's giving you some extra fuel, giving you a jump start, or if your boat's sinking, putting pumps on and rescuing you. So at 10, I decided like, I want to go get a job. And I knew the guys there. And at the time they offered me to be kind of like the boat bitch. And I don't know, can we swear on here? and basically was washing boats, changing oil, figuring things out. You know, got to learn a lot from Captain Andy. And it was funny because I was sitting in Wickford over here and getting a cup of coffee, having a meeting. And guess who walks up is Captain Andy. And I've known Andy since I was 10, you know, and it's just been, and then I became a captain. And now he and I worked actually for the competitor company for a little while too. So we'd always bullshit and kind of like make fun of each other and whatnot. And he's just a great dude. But was washing boats, and then decided like, all right, well, I'm going to go work at a marina, started to kind of manage the place in high school and whatnot. And then come college, I was like, you know what? And then I worked at a boatyard, washing sand and bottoms and doing restorations. We restored this old 21 Indian sailing vessel, which was awesome. Built boats, like everything in between, pretty much anything from building a boat to taking care of a boat to breaking it down and then running it. I mean, everything I've been able to have my hands on in some form or fashion.
So, you know, you mentioned becoming a captain. Mm-hmm. So here's the big question. Like, is there like an official, like, becoming a captain, or is it just
ceremony?
Like,
yeah,
I bought a boat and now I'm I bought a boat and a hat and now I'm a captain. I've got a I've got a pipe.
That's all you get. If you have a beard, you automatically become a captain.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Well, mustache, we can work with that.
We've had, there's this picture that we used to have, like, at the house I grew up in. Mm-hmm. It lived over our fireplace. Now I think it lives in, like, the office at my parents' place, but it's just this, like, old painting of this, like, grizzled captain, you know, with like the generic captain with, like, the yellow slicker or the,
yeah.
It's either like a blue or yellow slicker and the hat, mm-hmm. and the white beard and the pipe. And we used to make up stories all about how that was like my great grandfather. And he was
with
guests
that would come back to the house.
Oh yeah. Everybody would ask me, like, oh yeah, that's great grandpa. Yeah. And this and that.
So the hat is called a sou'wester.
Okay. Yeah. Sou'wester.
Sou'wester. Yeah.
I'm learning things on this. Look at podcast. That. Look at I that. Love it. How do you spell that?
Sou'wester. I want to say.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I could be wrong. I wasn't that good at
spelling. Oh, like an abbreviated version of Southwestern, like a Southwesterner. At least, like, because it's, I'm looking at it now. It's like S-O-U apostrophe Wester.
Oh, did I spell it right?
Yeah, you spelled it right.
Oh, hell yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. A Southwester is a traditional form of a collapsible oilskin rain hat that is longer in the back to protect the neck fully.
According to
Wikipedia here.
Yeah, Wikipedia is always right. Yeah, and the rest of, like, your gear. So from, like, the neck down, you got bibs, which are or oilers, and then your oilers are basically like the jacket and the bibs, and then obviously, you know, most guys wear boots depending on the day. But that's the old school captain right there. No, but I mean, to get a captain's license, most people are like, you know, they'll say, "Oh yeah, I'm a captain." I go, "Yeah, like, what's your license?" And they go, "Oh, well, you know, I just like the regular one." I go, "Okay, all right." Different. Say I respect it, but, like, different. Because, I mean, you can go get your boating license from the state, right? You take a course and then all of a sudden you're a captain. Yay. All right. But, I mean, for anyone that wants to run a boat and get paid, that's when you actually have to get your license, your National Maritime Credential, your NMC. And that basically means that you can get paid to run a boat and have passengers. So there's, like, a six pack, which is you can have six people on the boat, and it can't be, I can't have a certificate of inspection. And a COI basically means that you have to have your master's license. So it goes 25, 50, 100. And then there's different demarcations, like, is it 100 ton inshore, offshore, 100 ton mat, 100 ton, trying to think of the other ones, but basically 100 ton stands for gross weight tonnage. So that the amount a vessel can hold is essentially what that breaks down to.
So it's pretty much like when you're asking people about, like, "Oh, what kind of license do you have?" You're talking about, like, okay, in theory, how many people can you take out, kind of a thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, what size boat, and then how many people can you take out? Cause with a certificate of inspection, you can take up upwards of however much that vessel can hold based on its gross weight, you know? So if you're at a 25 ton, if you can hold, you know, 20 people, then I guess that's the max, right? But if you get 100 ton, like, most ferries are actually built to 98 or 99 tons because there's a bigger employment pool for them to pick from versus, like, a Masters Unlimited, which is a lot harder to get, you know? And those guys usually go to the Maritime Academy and whatnot, and it just becomes more difficult. So that's usually, like, really, really big commercial stuff, like container ships and tugs and big stuff. But essentially what it is you just got to be on the water a lot, and then you track your hours, you take a course, you get a test. If you pass, yeah, you got your license. If you don't, well, I guess you get to try again.
So it's not like it's like this apprenticeship thing where you have to be working under an existing captain for, you know, polishing his corncob pipe or whatever.
Corncob pipes, yes, 100%. You gotta have one.
I feel like that needs to be, like, part of the like logo for your license or something. Like, you're
right. Well, smoke my pipe. Tobacco.
Yeah, there we go. So what is your official captain's rating or
So I got my, when I was a junior in college studying marine affairs at URI, I was fortunate to just always be on the water since I was 10. So like actually all that time would accrue, you know? So whether you're just like on a boat working the deck versus actually behind the helm and getting some helm time to even my own personal boat, I had the opportunity to get my 100 ton master's. And actually the day I graduated, from the captain's course, I immediately got a job because the guy who was administering the course asked like, "Hey, what are you doing this summer? I need some help around here." And I was like, "Well, I was thinking about doing some harbor master stuff or like just getting my foot in the door somewhere, but sure, why not?" So it was basically like having my license and not having a job to having a license and immediately having a job within probably 5 minutes. And I was like, "This is awesome." And then I worked for that company for a little while. And then I moved on and moved out to Hawaii and started running boats out there, which was phenomenal. Can't beat that.
I was going to say, is that like kind of the gold standard out there? Like
Hawaii?
Yeah. I guess it depends on what you're looking for, right? But
yeah, I mean, there's definitely commercial work out there, but it was funny. So my buddy, Brian, who I just so happened to sit next to in an entrepreneurial class or a business class. And it was really the only one that I took because in my mind, just to go to business school or go get like an entrepreneurship minor is like, I don't know. I think it's kind of BS. Like you're either someone that wants to go start a business and whatnot, or you're probably just, I don't know, stroking your ego or saying you're an entrepreneur. I don't know. That's just my
now opinion. Now I'm going to get angry letters from everyone that listens that graduated with a business degree.
Well, I'm just saying, you know,
I'm joking.
No, I'm probably going to get, I usually piss some people off, but that's, hey,
if you, if you guys want, Zach's email, it's on the show notes page.
Nice. Yeah. Please send me an email with all your nasty comments.
Direct all comments to him.
But I mean, I definitely think there's value in it. I just don't think it's the end all be all, you know? So essentially he was like, "All right, well, we got friendly." He was actually someone that would help out on group projects, which was like a thumbs up for me. Cause usually I was always the guy that got stuck with him. Mm-hmm. And, he was next, you know, a few weeks went by, we started hanging out, and then come summertime, we always went back and forth, texting each other. He's like, "Hey man, I'm moving out to Arizona." I go, "Arizona?" He's like, "All right." He's like, "Do you want to go?" And I'm like, "No, I do not want to go. It sounds hot and there's no water. I'm a coastal guy." He goes, "All right, all right." So the next day he's like, "I booked a ticket to Hawaii. I'm going to move to Hawaii." And I go, "Huh, all right. Let me consider it. Let me think about it." And then by the end of the night, I had booked my ticket and was moving out to Hawaii and took all my bags and was like, "All right, we're going." And I think I moved out there October 31st, didn't know anyone, didn't have any idea what I was going to do, but, it was like, you know what, screw it. Why not? And immediately got a job because I had my license. And, in some cases I was overqualified because most of the work out there was like smaller charter boats. But I mean, I got to spend hours and hours with whales and dolphins and meet people from around the world, all walks of life. You know, some folks that saved every penny to go on this charter to, you know, I met the guy who built the new Ram Stadium. Him and his wife booked a private charter. So like it was really cool to be able to meet and talk with all those people, you know, and it was an awesome experience.
So what kind of trips would you run out there? Like what?
So the most popular trip we did, cause there was I would do a little bit of fishing. I did, you know, a lot of snorkeling, some diving, not a whole lot. But it was funny when I first got to the island, I was on the Big Island of Hawaii. I went to every single island. Well, not everyone, but Maui, Oahu, and Kona, the Big Island, and I ended up in Kona just to try them out. And to tell you the truth, Sam, I was actually going on the islands and picking out what gym I wanted to go to because that would determine where I wanted to live. Because other than boating, going to the gym is kind of like what I, you know, the other thing I kind of live for. So figured out that Kona was the best island, not only for work, but also for the gym that I wanted to go to. So ended up on Kona. And that day I went down to the Marine store with like a six pack of beer and put it on the front desk of the Marine store. And this is like the only Marine store on the island. I mean, Kona is a pretty small town. And then Hilo is like the city, but that's, you know, an hour and a half on the other side of the island. So if you need something boat related, like, you're going to this store. And I get put a six pack on the counter. I go, all right, man, like, who needs help around here? And he kind of looks at me. He goes, where are you from? I go, I'm from Rhode Island. He goes, Long Island? And I go, no, Rhode Island. And so we started bullshitting, and he pointed me towards a guy named Captain Bill. And come to find out, Captain Bill is like the grumpiest guy in the whole harbor. So I don't know if he was trying to, I don't know if he was fucking with me, the guy, but he pointed me towards the grumpiest guy in the harbor. And I showed up to the boat. He wasn't there. Called him. He was like, show up the next day. I'm like, okay, show up. Captain Bill is like a total grouch, right? Just kind of mean, salty old dude. And I'm like, I like you, Captain Bill.
I was going to say, I feel like that's what you want.
That is exactly what I wanted. That is exactly what I wanted. Like, just kind of like grizzled, like kind of burnt. His sunglass tan was nice and clean, like crisp, you know? Like, ah, Captain Bill, you remind me of home. And so anyway, he asked me one question. He's like, do you surf? And I go, no, not really. I mean, kind of. And he goes, all right, you're hired. And I go, what? Why? And he's like, well, if you surf, then you wouldn't have ever showed up to work. I'm like, oh, interesting. So it was kind of interesting. Like, there was a lot of cultural norms that were new over there. Like, you know, people were very, very friendly. Here in the Northeast, it's just not that at all. People are mad. People are angry. And I always kind of akin it to, like, you would have to lose someone's respect over there. And over here in New England, you have to gain someone's respect. Like, you have to work really, really hard, versus over there, you kind of show up. And if you're a hard worker, they already like you, you know, until you're not. And then they don't like you. But, you know, from there, we did a lot of Manta Ray trips, where basically you're going out at night, and you usually start around like 8, and then you're going till sometimes 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's pitch black out there. So we'd run the boats out. We have these big old surfboards that people hang on to, and we put these lights in the middle of the surfboards. And essentially, you hold on Superman style with your head down, and you have a float belt on and a wetsuit. And you're watching these manta rays come up, because there's what's called upwelling on the islands. Okay. And all that upwelling brings up a lot of nutrients. And then plankton will be attracted to the lights because they photosynthesize. Tongue twister. And these manta rays are just coming up to your body, and they're getting within, I don't know, 2-3 inches of your face. So it's like you're in an aquarium at night. 1 o'clock in the morning, pitch black. You're seeing sharks swim underneath you, you know, bull, tiger sharks, nurse sharks, all sorts of stuff. And then all of a sudden, these massive manta rays just swim into the picture. And it's just like, it's unbelievable. Dolphins,
do those things get? Like, compared to, like, you know, your arm span or something like that. What are we talking?
I used to know the exact, because I used to do this whole spiel, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, ramjet force feeding and this, that, and the other thing. But the pelagic rays, so like the deeper water rays, they would get, I think, 20 feet in length, like width-wise, like their wings, jeez, right? So like, you know, a truck. Now, the smaller rays would be like a small car.
And that's in width.
Like a bigger one.
You're saying width. That's width. That's not like tip to the long ass. Like, that's the wings.
That's the wings, tip to tip. They look like B-52 bombers under the water. And they're so graceful. And you're not supposed to touch them. But,
yeah,
I mean, you kind of at least try it once. And they bump into you. They're like this, like, slimy, soft, like, I don't even know how you really describe it. But,
man, I mean, I've been to SeaWorld before.
They feel like kind of like a dolphin, you know? Yeah.
In fairness, when I was in Hawaii, we were on a we went on a spearfishing trip, and let's just say I wasn't informed I wasn't supposed to touch the sea turtles.
Uh oh.
Oh, I went for like a full blown sea turtle ride.
Nice. Like, that's awesome.
it was awesome.
It was awesome.
So, you know, don't touch the manta rays. You accidentally bump into them. I get it. Oops. I get it. I'm advocating for this. I did not know at the time.
Yeah. Of course, I know what you mean.
Of course, I totally wouldn't have.
No, absolutely gone on not. The sea turtle Why ride would you have never seen one of these before? I shall not touch it. No way. No.
That's such like a human reaction though. Like, I've never seen this thing. I'm gonna like I'm gonna grab it and let it pull me around in the water. Like,
dude, I think it was Robin Williams, who's probably by far my favorite stand-up guy in history. He does like this Steve Irwin crocodile hunter. No,
why do I feel like now you're making me?
Did he have a nickname? He might have had a nickname, right? Google that.
Yeah, the crocodile hunter. You're the making me like hunter. Doubt it. I'm like,
right?
Yeah.
All right. It doesn't sound right.
I was like, yeah, the crocodile hunter. And then like you looked at me and I'm like, is it not the crocodile hunter?
Is it not that? Well, he does like this bit. He's like, that's the world's most dangerous snake over there. One bite, I'll die. And then it's like, I'm going to go touch it. And then here he is getting stung by a stingray. Like,
I'm going to go kiss it raw on the head.
I'm going to kiss it raw on the head.
Wait, have you seen his kid, by the way? Like his son?
Bindi, and what's his son's name?
Oh, I forget.
They're like wicked into the whole, like they carry Robert. On his legacy.
Robert okay. Irwin. He is like a little, like a clone of him. He is 100%. Like coolest, like I love anytime his like videos pop up on Facebook or Instagram. Yeah. I'm like, I will watch the hell. Because he is like, he's just like junior clone of his dad. It's the coolest thing.
It's so cool. Well, and that like I think I bumped into like what it was online. I bumped into Jeff Corwin. Remember Jeff Corwin?
I know that name.
Animal Why? Planet. Yeah.
He had Animal Planet.
Yeah. Like I don't know, like the Crocodile Hunter, Jeff Corwin. I can remember as a kid waking up and watching those guys go on these little adventures. You know, and I feel like now it's transitioned into some guys, it's the guy who always gets stung by stuff on YouTube.
Oh, geez. You know, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. But like, there's, I feel like we're missing some of that in the world nowadays, is trying to get people into conservation by showing people like what's out there, you know, and that's what I think the hunting and fishing community is trying to do. Right. And what I did every time when I was on the island, and even here, when I'm taking friends and family out and, you know, the occasional charter, like I always try and make it say, all right, this person probably knows nothing about the ocean and hasn't had the opportunity to. And it's kind of my duty to do that for them, like to show them, because, you know, we would take out a lot of small kids and their families and their parents. And some of the kids would be so frightened of the water and just like crying and screaming, and I'd be like, come on now, like you can do it. I pick them up, put them in a life jacket, like just hold them in the water for 15, 20 minutes, and they get comfortable. And like,
wait, with head up, head above, or
head under? Head under. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes. Just like a good dunking, you know, right by the legs. But it was like, I felt like I was so fortunate to grow up with a family that was really into the environment and conservation and fishing and kind of like living off the land a little bit. My mom had a garden, my dad was a fisherman. And so I've kind of felt like this duty to do that. And I feel like in some ways we're missing that piece, you know, with like guys like Jeff Corwin and Steve Irwin. And, you know, there's some folks out there, but the hunting and fishing community, I feel like has stepped up nowadays and is kind of filling that void. And I just hate the fact that, you know, some people see it as such a negative, when in reality it's actually what's paying for your little hiking trail down the road that it really isn't even a hike, but it gets you in the outdoors, you know, like, I don't know. It's such a catch 22, but I don't know. I can go on and on about that.
There's something, like you said, like Steve Irwin and, you know, all these guys, like they come at it a different way. Cause you know, there's been documentaries about the outdoors and National Geographic Channel and this and that, whatever, for, you know, years and years and years, and hundreds of people have done this stuff.
Yeah.
But there's something so special about it. I think it's their willingness to get so like down and dirty with this, you know, like with the stuff,
and 100%.
Do shit that people would just find like
crazy,
that shit crazy otherwise. Like, you know, and this willingness to get in close, and it's really what makes them stand out. And I'm trying to think like who, you know, because we have a lot of incredible representatives in the hunting industry, I feel like, and the fishing industry. But I'm really trying to think who is almost kind of like on that level. Because then also they're so personable, too. Like, you can't help but like kind of fall in love with this person.
Right.
And we
Like, what's not
we
to
need,
like?
We need more of that for sure. Yeah. Like, I think Ranella gets there to some extent. You know, it's like,
I do. Yeah,
I don't. A lot of anti-hunting people probably hate the fact that he hunts, but I think they. He's a personable guy. Like, you can't like, you talk to him for 5 minutes. You can't like not like him. Randy Newberg's a similar way. And I don't know, you know, the, you know, kind of the fishing side of things. Are there people kind of in that, on that side of things that are similar in that way?
I mean, I think there's some folks on Waypoint that I look to, like, to tell you the truth, like before I started working there, I didn't really know too, like it wasn't from like an influencer level. I didn't really know that until I started along the keel and I started coming across these people. And that's kind of how the whole podcast came to be. I think guys like, you know, Tom Rowland, who's been around forever. Mm-hmm. He's pretty, a stand-up guy in the fishing community. You know, Jonathan Moss is unbelievable. And a lot of these guys realize that, man, if I don't actually stand up for these fisheries, if I don't do something about it and go to town hall meetings and fight for, you know, remediation and trying to clean up the ecosystem in our watersheds, then I'm not going to be able to take guys chartering. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that simple. If we don't protect the resource and conserve it, then we're not going to have an economy around it, you know? So it's one hand washes the other. And, you know, some people want to take more advantage of the fishery than others, and others want to just leave it alone. But I've read this when I was in school, like it really kind of all came together for me. I was doing a project and it was on John Muir and Gifford Pinchot and Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt is hands down the man. Like, you can't ride a moose across a river and then go with the Rough Riders up a hill, you know, into battle, and then also go and have your own David Boone or the Davy Crockett Club. And like, he was an entrepreneur. He was a war fighter. Like, he was a badass. And, you know, those two guys, Gifford Pinchot and John Muir, kind of came together. And like, Gifford Pinchot is very much so a conservationist, mm-hmm. right? He started the U.S. Forest Service. John Muir was kind of the backbone for the national park system. And as was Theodore Roosevelt, that was kind of his idea. But Gifford Pinchot was like, all right, we got to use this resource. Like, we need wood. We need to have resources accessible. And John Muir was more like, well, let's not touch it. Like, we got to preserve it. And I think it's like coming into that middle zone where we want to preserve areas, but we also want to conserve areas. And like, the idea of conservation and how capitalism plays a role in it, I think kind of gets diluted nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you have the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is something that on the water side of things that conserves the fisheries and establishes zones in the ocean. And then what was... what's the act? I always forget that.
We've got Dingell Johnson and Pittman Robertson.
Pittman Robertson. That's what I was thinking of. That, you know, obviously is what pays for everything, you know?
Yeah, we got Pittman Robertson, which is the excise tax on hunting, any sort of hunting gear. So, and ammo, guns, bows, arrows, all of that stuff. And then on, there's a similar one to Dingell Johnson on the fishing side of things. Which I
not the best name.
I always, you know, you have to laugh. Like,
you have to laugh.
I've gotten to the point now where I can say it without totally giggling like a 12-year-old boy, but it's still like the back of my head is like Dingell Johnson.
What a horrible name.
Oh my gosh, that definitely did not pass. Like, I feel like product names, bill names, like anything, like, you need to just hire like a 14-year-old boy, like, to be on your staff, and all you do, his sole job is you just send name, like, product name ideas to him. Mm-hmm. And if he laughs, you're like, okay, we need to continue working on this.
All right, we got
it. Like,
it passes the laugh,
like,
test.
I mean, I was walking through the grocery store a few months ago and I saw a package of aged nut cheese, you know, and it just, and I sat there for a moment and I said, well, there we go. That did not pass.
Is that a Montana thing?
That was a California thing, I believe, was where I saw that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
California.
So, man, tell me a little bit about the podcast.
Yeah, so the podcast kind of came to be, man, I was living out in Hawaii, and always been kind of an entrepreneurial person, was thinking to myself, all right, what's like the next project? And for me, I'd done Amazon businesses. I've, you know, helped folks out with a variety of different things, carpentry, I mean, all sorts of stuff. And I was like, you know what? I want to try and change things up. Like, I don't know if I want to be just a boat guy my whole life, you know? And like, what's different way? Like, how can I network? How can I get in touch with people? So kind of, you know, I guess selfishly, I started the podcast out of curiosity of like, what else is out there in terms of like jobs, you know, and who can I talk to and who can I get connected with, and not knowing anything of where it would go or how it would end up. And I started, you know, I interviewed three folks, you know, pitched them the idea. They said yes. And it was Rugged Seas, You Surfboard Wax, and my good friend, Graham Watson, who's an oyster farmer. So with like a $20 mic from Amazon, I bought it offline. It was a USB mic plugged into my laptop, and in the third floor apartment building of my, you know, where I was living at the time, I started what was then called Beyond the Buoy. And then through some trademark issues and whatnot, changed the name to Along the Keel. But yeah, that's where the start came from. And I think we're at, I want to say 89 episodes now. 88 episodes, 89. So plugging away. Oh, yeah, man. It's been fun being able to meet a lot of different people.
No, I mean, I always say, like, I remember when I started, like, to this day, I'm surprised I made it past episode 3, you know, it's like, it's just like, it's kind of, you know, plugging along. I'm just always, always doing it. And it's cool to see.
Well, you're at like way above 100.
You're going right? to, I'm pretty sure you're going to be episode 245. Oh, and that doesn't count. That doesn't count like a handful of bonus episodes, my like conservation, like bonus episodes as well.
Yeah.
So I'm probably around 275. I want to say
that's impressive.
Something like that.
That's really impressive.
I will say I've had probably, there's been about three periods where I've gone like a month to a month and a half without releasing, typically because, I'm going to probably blame it on a woman. a woman or a job. It's one of the two is probably the reason I stopped releasing it in a given time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the feeling.
My heart was broken. I can't.
I can't talk to people.
It's just, you know, hunting reminds me of her. No, that was not the case. Anyway.
Moving on.
But so, you know, like, who are some of, you know, tell us a little bit, you know, who are some of the guests you've had on? Some maybe the notable guests, what people can expect if they wanted to listen to Along the Keel.
Yeah, I mean, so my whole take was I took the idea of really three shows. And one of them was more like format-wise. And so there's a show called Barbell Shrugged. And Barbell Shrugged, you know, kind of relates back to my the weightlifting fitness side of me. And I've been listening to those guys since high school. And I just love the way they did it. Very conversational, kind of like a roundtable discussion and interviewing people. So Barbell Shrugged was kind of like the format. Dirty Jobs was really the content.
Okay.
Because I can remember as a kid when Dirty Jobs like first came out, I would actually record episodes off the TV with like a camcorder because I love Dirty Jobs so much and Mike Rowe. And just the idea of like hard work, you know, and putting in time and consistency. And, you know, some of these guys, like I remember he was a pig farmer in Las Vegas. And it's a pretty famous episode. Like he goes there with all this, the slop and leftovers from the casinos and he feeds these pigs.
Like, I feel like I've seen this one. Like, this really rings probably. A bell.
Yeah, probably. And I can just remember watching that episode and being like, man, that guy's a badass. And he's also a millionaire, you know, and he's a pig farmer. Like, who knew? And I think it was between that Barbell Shrugged and then another show, How I Built This, by Guy Raz, which I was actually just listening to today, which tell the stories behind businesses, you know, big, big brands, whether it be like Cliff Bar, Airbnb, Mark Cuban, like all these big guys. So I kind of took all those and I was like, man, what do I love? I love the ocean. I love business. And let me tell the stories behind people that are living their lives by the water and sometimes even off like inshore a little bit. Like we've had some folks on that kind of related to the ocean, but not really. But a lot of it's been, you know, brands being built by the water is kind of our bread and butter. So, you know, Bahio sunglasses. I'm trying to think. The qualified captain we just had on, which was cool. Aaron, the ones that we can do in person, we try. Like, we'll bring our whole studio in a big Pelican case, three cameras, like lights, the whole bit. And we'll do it where they are in their own environment. We shoot a pretty cool trailer. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been, you know, I never thought I'd be able to travel around and meet a lot of cool people. And it's now become actually a business. So it's, I brought on a partner and we are like a digital agency / podcast / production studio and produce several other podcasts for people. And yeah, man, it's been a whirlwind, but it's been fun. Like, you never, I always tell people, like, if you want to learn and you want to meet a lot of people, start a podcast. Cause it's like I call it my MBA, my free MBA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm sure you know the feeling.
Oh, I mean, that is everyone that listened, that's been listening for a while knows that is exactly why I started my podcast. Like, mm-hmm. I was probably like 40 episodes in before I ever went on my first hunt. Like, I just like, I'm going to start this thing because I need to meet people to know what they're doing. Cause I don't have that community built. So if I'm going to build it, I'm going to build it with some smart ass people that know what they're talking about. And I've interviewed some really smart people and I've interviewed some questionably smart people.
they look smart when you first met them,
you know, and I've learned some, there've been a few episodes where I've looked back and I'm like, I'm really tempted to just pull that episode down. Like talking like years later when I find out certain things about people, but I'll let my listeners guess which episodes those were. Gosh. And I know some of my buddies that are listening that have been part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably know how it is. Like, somebody that just starts hunting or just starts fishing, you know, as a, mm-hmm. as just a person that's passionate about hunting or fishing, like, mm-hmm. they don't see that versus like being in the industry. You get all of the little dirty secrets and gossip and drama. It is like a Lifetime movie half of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, dear Lord, if you use the wrong product in front of the wrong person.
Oh my God.
Lord help you. Is it like that? Nuts. So is it like that in kind of the fishing world? Because I know, like, shoot, in the hunting industry, if you wear Sitka in front of a Kuyu guy or you take Mountain Ops in front of a wilderness athlete guy, you're going to...
you're going to hear it.
Oh, man, you're going to get... Pictures are going to be taken. Posts are going to be made. Shit's going to be talked.
I would... I don't think so. It's not as, cause like having like working in the hunt and fish industry now, I mean, obviously I'm way more well-versed in the fishing industry. Like, that's my bread and butter. Yeah. Not as much. I mean, the hunting industry is like, I've had to learn a lot about the hunting industry, you know, with just for work purposes. And it's been interesting. I mean, it's very clicky. There's a lot of culture behind it that dates back for, I mean, shit, hundreds of years as to why things work the way they are. Like,
back to Teddy Roosevelt and Pinchot.
Back to Teddy Roosevelt, because he's the man. The father of modern hunting. I mean, kind of. Not wrong.
Father
not
of modern off. Conservation.
Conservation, yes. All right. I'll talk to you. You know, it's definitely not as clicky. I mean, I think when you really boil it down, when you talk about commercial fishing, it is incredibly clicky. Like, what fishermen's here, what spot, like, you can't fish on my spot. And in terms of guiding too, I mean, that's super, super, super clicky. Like, guys will, you know, I mean, shit, I would throw lobster pots out, just my recreational pots. And then the next day they'd be gone. And fishermen would either come and cut them and just let them sink, or they'd pull them up and take them.
Seriously.
Oh yeah. All the time. Yeah. So in that regard, yes. In the regard of like what gear, like, if, don't be caught dead wearing Grunins in front of Guy Cotton. Like, no, I don't think anyone really cares about that.
So I'm not going to start like a turf war if I show up in some Huck shorts or something.
No, you'll be fine. Whatever shorts you want to wear.
Could you like imagine? You just can't. You're like hopping onto a captain's boat in some Huck shorts. He's like, get the fuck off.
Get off. Well, if you have bananas, he's definitely going to say that. No bananas on boats.
No.
Although I call bullshit.
That, okay. So that's like, let's talk about this for a minute. I completely forgot about this. Cause this is one of those things I love. I want to hear, like, the boat superstitions, you know, like, because I know I know the bananas on a boat is one. I'm sure there's I'm sure there's got to be some a few other boat things that that us Westerners probably don't know about.
I'm pretty sure whistling on a boat is a no-no. Although I've whistled on a boat and nothing's happened yet. So I've also eaten a lot of bananas on boats and nothing's happened yet. And I've been able to fish and catch fish at the same time. But I think the super like fishermen are, and I'm definitely a little super, I'm a little stitious. I'm not, I wouldn't say superstitious,
just
but
a little,
just stitious. A little bit of stitious. Yeah. Shout out Michael Scott. so yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of, the ocean's like very kind of, it's romanticized a lot, and it's kind of like this always churning, never really know, no one really truly knows how to harness its power. You know, it's kind of like being on a mountain. Like you just, you can feel the energy of it. I know that sounds kind of out there, but it's just something that I think everyone knows. You know, like when you're out at, when you're offshore and you look around and there's nothing, like there's no land, you know, and there's 5,000 feet of water under you. Mm-hmm. You're like, huh? Yeah. I'm really small right now.
This isn't, this is not where I belong.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It's right. It's like, we don't actually belong out here. You know,
like I mean, may feel called to come out here, but this is not where I belong. Like,
right. It's like, I'm here for a reason. So yeah, I think just by tradition, it, like you kind of have to be somewhat superstitious. Like, I don't know.
I mean, it's part of the culture, and like you adopt that a little bit, like
absolutely
to adopt that culture. Cause it's like, I've heard the banana one. What I've heard about the whistling is that it's like an omen to stir up the winds or something.
Interesting.
That's what I've heard about whistling. And it's funny. You, that's one thing with fly fishermen. Mm-hmm. When you're out on a float trip or something, you do not say the W word.
Really?
Yeah. You're not allowed to say the W word. It's always referred to as the W.
The W. Well, supposedly bananas, you know, because when ships would sink, but bananas float, right? So when guys would come up to a wreck, all they would see it's was bananas floating
in the water.
And it's just bananas. Like, I'm sure there's
bananas
other stuff,
sink ships.
But yeah, bananas sink ships. Like, you know, that's it.
That would be okay. Like, if you're not gonna make this shirt, I'm giving you the option first. I'm gonna take it. But I really think one of us needs to make a shirt that just, it's just literally a black shirt with a yellow banana, and underneath it says bananas sink ships.
Hey, I'll throw in with one. I'll throw in on that.
Okay. We'll make like a co-branded t-shirt.
Collab. It's going to be a collab.
I've got like this whole list, man. I need to just design them out, do some print on demand stuff, and start selling these t-shirts.
Dude, you should. You should.
I'm.
Although I want a royalty for that.
We'll split the fees on that one for sure.
Okay.
trying to think some of the other ones I've seen. I mean, you know, if we're talking like old ones, you're not allowed to have women on ships, but I don't think that would fly so much today.
It's not as fun.
I mean, listen, if we know summer culture at all, if I know country girls at all, like there's.
You're on a lake drinking, you know, what is that song? Don't buy me a boat.
Money can't buy happiness.
Yeah, there you go.
But it can buy me a boat.
Hey.
Though I'm trying to think what are the other ones though that I've heard. There's one about stepping on a boat that you're only I've heard you're supposed to like step on with one foot or the other.
Really?
And then and some of this stuff, who knows if this is like this could be just me making stuff up. And then the other one I've heard is you're never supposed to change a boat's name.
That is true. Okay. That is true. Yeah. Although I know a lot of people have done that, and I'd probably abide by that one. Yep. If I bought a boat that had a name. All the boats that I've owned actually never had a name, and they still don't have a name. Yep. Nope.
You haven't named any of them?
Haven't named any of them. Nope. I know I'm kind of boring. Yeah.
Is that I feel like that needs to be, okay, here's another brilliant idea for you.
Okay.
That needs to be, for one of your boats, that needs to be a competition on the podcast. That needs to be like a like and subscribe.
I like
kind
that
of competition. And you know,
but what if I don't like the answer?
Well, so what you do is you have them suggest the name beforehand.
Okay.
You know, and then you just cheat and pick whatever name you like the best. I'm giving away secrets here.
Dude, I like that. Is some good social strategy right there. Going back to TikTok in the beginning.
Be like, hit it up and like, follow, and subscribe to the podcast and suggest a boat name, and you could win big.
And then just throw your own in there and then be like, I'm going to pick my own. I think there was a research boat that I think it was a lot of people got behind the name Bodie McBoatface.
Bodie McBoatface.
And that actually won. And then they said, we're not naming it that.
What was it? Was it like High Point or somebody? I can't even remember. Somebody was releasing a new gun and they did a competition to name the gun, and it was like, it was something. Pew-pew. I got to look this up right now.
I'll give it to, you know, people on social can be so freaking creative. Like if you go through the comments on some of these posts, they're absolutely hilarious. Like the amount of stand-up comedians out there that could just like crush, who are just behind their keyboard warriors. I mean, it's pretty funny shit.
It was High Point. Okay. I just found it. It was High Point. They did a competition to name the gun.
Who won?
Name the nine. They were coming out with a new 9mm. And apparently the highest vote was the Yeet Cannon. And if I remember correctly, and somebody could probably correct me if I'm wrong, if I remember correctly, they like named it. It like got named. And Everyone's like, yeah, it's the Yeet Cannon. Like that won. And then I can't remember if they just picked something else or they're like, no, we're not going to do that. And there was such an uproar that I'm pretty sure they went back, and it's like it's officially named the Yeet Cannon, but they call it the YC9.
Oh my God.
If I remember correctly, I'm sure somebody will let me know if I'm wrong, but yeah, the High Point YC9, the Yeet Cannon 9mm.
I hope they got a lot of followers out of that one.
Gosh. I mean, that is like servicing your clientele there, though. Like,
oh my God, it's brilliant.
Because, like, honestly, like, who's gonna? What's the downside of that? Okay, yeah, right. It's got a goofy name, but really, like, if you're an established brand, what's the downside?
None. I mean, you were just talking about Nut Cheese and Dingleberry Johnson or whatever his name was. like, how bad could it really be? You know.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you may end up with the boat named the Bass Hole, but you know.
Well, there's a boat in Wickford Harbor called the Butt Snorkeler. So I think that probably pretty much tops it for me.
That's interesting. I feel like, you know, it's like license plates, you know, where when you get a new license plate, they like check to make sure it's not anything dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised, you know, they definitely don't have that with boats. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not the. Anyway.
I want to hear a funny license plate story. So I was on the Big Island and I got an offer because I shipped my truck out there, and it's the same truck that I have now. And I had my Rhode Island plates.
Okay.
Never decided to change them. I was trying to get away with it as long as I could. And all of a sudden I get this note coming back from, you know, the boat, and there's a note on my windshield, and it's this guy with his number and name saying, hey, I'm interested in your license plates. And I go, all right, this is weird. I'm going to call just to find out.
Yeah.
It was this like weird, like Russian, Eastern European guy.
Yeah.
It picks up the phone and he offers me avocados and bananas for my license plate. Cause he's like apparently a collector and mine are super rare.
I give you three camels for your, dude, for your license
plate. Literally. And I was like, no. And he was like, okay, I give you two bags of avocados. And he kept on upping the amount of food. And I'm like, dude, I don't need that. I need my plates
and bananas for your license plate. Yeah, I mean, now exactly. If you could have worked out a deal where it was like a consistent, like weekly delivery of avocados and bananas, then that may have been worth selling the plates and re-registering in Hawaii. But
it's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. And I could have resold the bananas and avocados. All right. I see where
note to self. Rhode Island license plate market. If you're down with the avocados and bananas, you know, pick yourself up a Rhode Island license plate on eBay.
Absolutely brutal.
Oh, dear Lord. So, man, if folks wanted to find you online, follow along with the adventures, check out the podcast, where can they find all of your stuff?
They can find it. I mean, obviously, everywhere you listen to any podcast, you know, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, Waypoint, all those places. And then you can also find us on alongthekeel.com. Along the Keel is for all our social, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, all that. That's pretty much it. Sign up for our newsletter. All that jazz. Yeah.
All right, man. I will make sure those get linked on the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. I'm glad we finally got to sit down and do this. I think I timed that just right, finishing off my beer. If you couldn't tell, I'm a lightweight these days.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm... No, we're in a new month now. So this is like...
Oh, number one.
I think I had two last month. So this is definitely number one for this month.
Go easy.
I've got like a quota of three more. Man, I'm hitting it early. I'm glad we got to knock this one out, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam, for having me on, and look forward to the next one.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. Big thank you to Zach for hopping on. Really enjoyed that conversation. A little bit of fun, just kind of bullshitting around. Y'all, that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.